everybody. Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday, January 24th, 2019. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Game Informer's EIC, Andy McNamara. Yay! Andy, how the hell are you?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself, Greg?
Good. You're out here from Minnesota.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
The Sunshine State.
The Sunshine State. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We're at zero most of the time.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly. Well, so I'm so happy you're finally here. I feel like I'm only thrilled get to see you at Judges Week, E3, occasionally DICE, but like usually we get that Judges Week time together.
That's our time. That really is our time. Yeah. So that's my favorite part of Judges Week is the other judges.
Exactly. Well, you could have just said me, but it's cool. Don't worry. It's fun. Andy, I love that you're here. I always like introducing people, though. If somebody doesn't know you, how long have you been at Game Informer? How long have you been EIC? How long have you been in the industry? Give everybody your elevator pitch of the story, the McNamara story.
Well, it's been a long time. I started I worked in game stores, back in
Babbage's.
Actually, I worked at Funko Land.
Yeah, fuck yeah, you did. I love Funko Land.
I did. Yeah, the funny thing, I worked at Funko Land number one,
one started it.
Basically, it was a mail order company.
Okay,
they opened up their very first one in Eden Prairie, Minnesota.
Oh wow!
And at the time, I don't know, you know, what you remember about games, but games weren't at every game store.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you wanted a Capcom game, sometimes they were only at this kind of store or that store. So it was you had to adventure.
Sure.
So part of buying games at that time in the late 80s was to get in your car, drive to five different stores to find the games. Yeah. Right. And then it sounds weird. And then my friend was like, there's this new store. We got to go check it out. Went down there and I walked in and they had every game. And I was like, there's a help wanted sign. You guys got anybody to work here? And I was like, I'm in.
Yeah.
And so I started working there.
You're like, I made it, mom and dad. I'm in the games industry.
Exactly. I was thrilled. And I was, because I had played. I mean, basically my high school career was playing games rather than going to high school. Don't do that, kids. But I played a lot of games. So and this is the NES era. And so I found that I was really good at selling games. So it was people come in and be like, I played that. If you like this, you're going to like this.
Yeah.
And the guy who owned Funko Land was like, I want to start a magazine. Do you want to work on it? And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And so completely out of the blue, though, I mean, I guess, since I was a kid, I started playing games when I was an ASCII. On, supercomputers I started playing games. I know I don't look that old, but so basically I started playing games then and played games my whole life. I remember the crash in 83, which of course was devastating a little bit to me as a gamer. So I was thrilled to get to work on a magazine. And so I started as editorial assistant. And that was in 91, our first issue.
Yeah.
And then I was editor in chief in 94.
Wow.
So I've been doing it for 27 years.
That is an insane legacy. Yeah. An insane legacy.
It's a long time.
I remember when people were like, you've been at IGN for 8 years. You're a dinosaur. You don't know anything. How do you do it? Look at you, dude.
So yeah, so it's been a long journey and a lot of fun. And it's making the magazines, been a blast.
Sure.
It's just so fun to, be in games. And, games, as it's a fun industry because there's so many smart people you get to meet.
Sure.
And interact with that are doing cool and interesting things all the time. And I think that's what's kept me doing the same thing forever.
Oh, and no day's ever the same, right?
Yeah,
no interview or game is ever the same. And let alone the fact, I always like the idea that you get to have these moments, right? When Neil Druckmann is coming through showing you whatever. And then the next time you see him in the cycle, when it's 5 years later and all you get caught up on everything that's happened to get to this part in the journey and how the game looks so much different than this. Or you see people who are, going from the big AAA company and then spin out and do their own little things and how they took a lesson learned there and brought it to this.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's fun to watch and it's fun to see it's fun to watch. I've seen many times, people for the first time be like, hey, I've never shown this game to anybody.
Yeah.
And
they're
showing their baby that they've worked so hard on. And it's just interesting to watch. And like you said, the passion in the game industry, I think people don't necessarily always get it.
Yeah.
But this isn't people they're doing it because they love it. Right. You know what I mean? Yes, it's a job. And, yes, it's art or whatever other piece it is, but they generally love games and the idea of making games, and it's fun to watch
those and that excitement come to, right
yeah exactly.
Their energy always rubs off on us. I think it's so easy for us to get excited about their exciting ideas.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So then the big question I feel is, how do you, having been a Game Informer since the inception here doing all this different stuff, how has Game Informer remained Game Informer? How has it, we've seen so many magazines crumble, right? Or not be able to compete in the digital age. You guys have always done a great job of that.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, I think that's the toughest thing. And, you're always kind of it's weird to be like the last man standing to some degree
at one point.
You know, like but our fans really love the print. We've even tried to go, like, you know, we have a digital product that we put out there and people love it, but like people were like, no, I just want print.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I think it has a certain, like, for bad, like a bad analogy, like kind of like vinyl a little bit, you know what I mean? There's a classic sense to it. And
dude,
we try
when mine shows up, I have it sent to the office and it's always that thing of like, yeah. And you like kick your feet up for a second, disconnect from the phone or the computer. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, people really like that. So we've been very lucky in that. And it's been something that, you know, a long time ago, we've had certainly our hardships over the, you know, 27 years. But when we started to try to do things that we felt like weren't on the internet, do you know what I mean? Like that was a new challenge. I even remember when the internet, like I remember going to like an E3 and it was like, oh, look, Sega has like a website. What's that? You know, which was weird at the time. And like, you know, it obviously changed everything. And IGN and GameSpot all came along and like, you know, changed the way everything worked. But, you know, we were like, what can we do that's different that people aren't getting somewhere else?
Yeah.
And we've always kind of leaned into that, is just try to be like, we have more time to be a magazine, so we're not in a rush to finish some things. Right.
I hated you guys at E3 when like things end, like you guys, like, what are you guys up to? And I'm like, oh, we're going to go to the war room and write till 3 a.m. What are you guys going to do? I don't know, steaks, some drinks. We have to ride for a month. I'm like, get the hell out of here.
I know. And that was before we had a website, which was like, oh, it was pretty glorious. And be like, well, we're going to go to the parties.
Yeah,
see ya.
See ya.
But now we do have the website and we do have to do that a little bit too. But we try not to. We really try to keep some of our magazine mentality, I guess, a little bit.
Well, that's the thing is, you've done a great job of separating them, right?
Yeah.
I feel like you have Imran's been on this podcast before. You have someone out there in multiple people doing the news. Here's the breaking thing, here's the release date, but then the magazine product still is, here's a longer feature, here's a more thought out thing, here's an opinion piece.
Yeah, so it's worked well, and I mean, it's a lot of fun, and we've been lucky. I think the thing that I like, at least I'm personally most proud of, is we've done we try to find interesting games, and some of them are really easy, like, hey, do you want to put the next, you know, Last of Us on the cover? And okay, we would do that, you know. But I mean, we're always trying to find new and interesting games to put on the cover to kind of feature and try to help out. And we've had ones that like have gone from unknown. I think you talked about, like, you know, when you find a game that you love and you tell people about and it kind of blows up, and you help kind of like bring people to games that they love, that's like the best part.
100%.
Right? You know what I mean? And so like when we get a chance to do some fun covers that we get to really kind of show someone something that they've never seen before is a lot of fun.
Well, I like, you guys have been working with, and I know you work with everybody, but most recently in my mindset, right, PlayStation, Dreams and Days Gone, right? Games that had been announced and people were just like, I don't know. And then you guys get to go and have a giant spread and a giant cover and a month of coverage of like, no, here's why you have to pay attention to this. This is what this game is.
Yeah, and that's the fun part. And really getting to go and it's funny, it sounds weird, but like when we go and spend extended time with the developers, you know, they're kind of like, here's what we want to, like the story we want to tell. And we're like, oh, that's really interesting. But also sometimes people are like, have you guys realized that this is really cool?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I think sometimes they're just so insulated in like building and doing the things that you're doing. We're like, hey, we want to focus on this. And they're like, we weren't quite ready to discuss that. But yeah. I mean, like, let's talk about that. You know, because it's kind of like finding the things that they don't necessarily see that's important about their games. And so we've been very lucky, like, with those kind of games. And I think that's the thing, that we get a chance to go see them early and check them out and get the vision of where they're trying to go. And I think, like, when we get it and we go like, I think not only will we love this, but that the gamers would be really into this, it's easy to kind of hop on board. And you know, Dreams is something that like can change a lot of things. It's gonna be interesting to see. Like, I mean, we can tell people about it, but it's gonna be when that game comes out.
And that's the thing right now, the people who have been breaking the NDA, I don't know how much you've seen here's they remade Dead Space. They remade PT. And you're starting to see people actually turn their head and be like, wait, what?
Yeah.
the weird, I'm a teardrop character is Dead Space? Like, what? And it's like, when that game gets out, it's going to be fascinating to see what is actually created and if that can turn mainstream heads.
Yes, exactly. And I think, too, it's going to be, like, I think the community is going to do some interesting things there that you can, like, I like the idea of like gaming through someone's headspace. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like kind of like through their playlists and through their kind of things that they create. And I think that's going to be a fun thing and kind of just like a way to, I think, like find little adventures and things you don't normally would play or like. And then also too, like, be like, nah, that stinks, but here, give me all the 5-star stuff, you know, it'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited for the collaboration of it. That's what I keep saying about Dreams. When they went at a E3 or PSX the first time, they showed the XP system, and it was like, no, you'd make the music and then your thing gets put in a popular level and then you'll get XP for that. It's like, oh, that's going to really open it up of like, yeah, I only want to do this.
Yeah.
The only thing I can do is be Greg Miller and narrate. So I'm going to put up narrated VO tracks and you put them in, whatever. That's really cool. That's really exciting.
And it's an insane game too. Like, I think you said, like, I went to it E3. I was like, oh, we have an hour meeting. What are we going to go through? And like every other minute they showed me something. I was like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Oh, there's a full music suite.
No. It was just
you can upload it. Here, just record it on your phone and put it in. Oh, you don't understand like levers and system? Just record the platform moving and hit on record. And it's done. Like, oh my God.
It's insane. Yeah. And so I think it's fun to go do those things. So yeah, that's our favorite thing in Game Informer. I think we have a lineup. Like this year, we were kind of like, oh, you know, what is this a down year? As we have like new hardware coming in 2020. You know, I think is at least the way it's pointing towards. Yeah. I mean, it can always change, but you're like, will it be a down year? Is it kind of the end? And like, we've seen so many exciting games like coming up, and I think this year is going to be actually pretty fire.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
It's off to the races. We'll be covering it here because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. Patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames. Bronze members get to submit their questions. Silver members get the show ad-free as an MP3 and audio file delivered direct to their door. Of course, you don't have to give us any bucks. You can watch us record the show live on twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindafunny.com/you're wrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you. Remember, Arizona, we're coming to party with you this Sunday in Portillo's in Tempe. Kevin Coelho is going to be there. He's excited. He's got a camera mic he's been running around doing stuff with. It's exciting. 11 a.m. Portillo's Tempe. And then we're streaming Wednesday, the 30th of January, our final fundraising stream for the month of January. 12 hours, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. All sorts of shenanigans, stretch goals. Are we going to London? We'll find out. Today, we're brought to you by Robinhood and Third Love, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news! Three items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen!
Number one, the Kingdom Hearts 3 review embargo is up, Andy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh my God.
It's finally here. The game is real. There's no stopping it this time.
Is it good?
Apparently it is good, Kevin. Thank you for asking and being a participant out there. Game Informer itself gave it a 9.5 out of 10.
Yes. Kim Wallace, she is a huge Kingdom Hearts fan. She has been excited. She's covered this game like a million. I think she's gone to Tokyo 2 or 3 times to cover this game. She's super excited about it. Her review came out this morning. I just got a chance to glance through it. I know that at least when I got a chance to play it at Judges Week, which we did, it's certainly looking to be the best looking Kingdom Hearts game 100%. They've made. Obviously, like, it's been forever in the making. It's going to all kinds of crazy places and new lands. I myself am not a Kingdom Hearts fan, which is going to get me killed, I think.
No, we understand. I'm in your boat. I respect it. It's just not my kind of thing, and I get it.
Yeah, it sucks.
No, Kevin.
I hate it.
No, Kevin, no. You don't feel that way.
But I know the fans love it, and Kim is a huge fan, and she's super excited about it, and I think that it's going to score through the roof.
Metacritic right now, as of 10:16 a.m., is holding strong at 89. I'm reading from GameSpot's roundup. They put this in there from Kim's Game Informer review. While not perfect, Kingdom Hearts 3 is the game I've been waiting for. After finishing it, I was delighted by how satisfied I was with the journey. I traversed worlds with some of my favorite Disney characters, persevered through challenging boss battles, and saw a triumphant finale that only makes me more excited for the future. This series still has a lot of heart, and that's what makes it so endearing.
I mean, its fans love it.
And that's the thing. You know, I'm interested to hear your take on it, I guess. But I feel we've moved to it in the way it should be, that for the most part, if I'm a fan of a game, I want a fan to be reviewing the game, right?
Yeah.
This game, especially Kingdom Hearts 3, like, this is a thing built for someone like Kim. So I think her opinion carries weight to that kind of fan.
I think that's one of the interesting things about, I think, games, is that they've really leaned into like being their own thing, right? You know, across the board. And like, we always talk about, like, you don't want to write the review like, if you like sports games, you know what I mean? Like,
fans of the genre.
Yeah. It's just, that's not the way that anyone wants to do it. I mean, like, if you don't like Kingdom Hearts, you're not going to read the review, right? Yeah. You don't care. It's like, also you're gonna be like, oh, Kingdom Hearts 3, I'm in.
Yeah.
Right. Though I do think that there's a lot of talk about it. And if you see people and you see that people that love it and what they love about it and that interests you, that's how you'll find your way into Kingdom Hearts. So I think it is important to get people that love a series on a game for a game review. I think that gives a better dialogue. And I think that's something that we talked about a little bit this morning was that, you know, game reviewers are professionals. I know it sounds crazy and like someone somewhere will argue that on a forum that they're not.
Well, actually.
And they, you know, they try to take a critical eye. I mean, even as a fan, they will go in and go, this is what they did not execute. This is what they did not do well. This is what they could do better next time. But you can still love something that's flawed.
100%.
Right? And I think of all my favorite games, there's certainly plenty of flaws in them and things that you don't love, but you overlook those when they connect with you.
Yep.
And I think that's the most powerful things that games do is when they connect with you, you know, you don't care about those little things or even like, oh, this is an old system of how you did World Quests or whatever. And it's like, who cares?
I love this thing. That story stuck with me.
Yeah. So, and I think that's important. So I think for reviewers and like, you know, you wouldn't want someone who doesn't understand the NHL to review NHL games, right? You don't want someone who doesn't understand RPGs to review RPG games. I think we have to have people that have expertise. And that's really kind of one of the funny things when we hire people at Game Informer, we'll be like, what is our problem? Like, we don't need, it's kind of a football analogy, but like, I don't need three quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Right. I need someone who can do something else. So like at a time, like when someone moves on, goes to do something else in the industry, we'll be like, oh my gosh, we lost our expert at
blank.
Blank. Yeah. And so when we go out and hire, there's a lot of talented people out there. We try to not only find someone super talented, but someone that fills those like blind spots so that we're able to understand and like bring that history to those franchises, right? Because I mean, you can't just play Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah, exactly. And what's fascinating about where we are with so many voices in YouTube and podcasts and sites and magazines, there is an angle for, hey, I've never done it and I'm jumping in. But I feel like so many people who are going to be interested in Kingdom Hearts 3 are going to be like, I'm a diehard fan. I want to know what a diehard fan thinks. And then the only question they're going to have if they're on the other side is this an okay one for beginners?
Yeah,
can I jump in here? Right? That's what I got about when we're talking about Resident Evil 2. Like, that's so many people are just like, I never played. Can I jump in? Like, hell yeah, this is a great one to jump in on. You don't need to know anything. I didn't know anything.
I mean, I think that's definitely there. And I think there's a chance, like, a lot of times, like through podcasts and everything else, the other medias that we have now, there is a chance for those other voices to be brought up.
Sure.
And we know other people on staff will play the games, right? Because we're always, I don't know about you guys, but we're always kind of playing, everyone's playing all the games so they can argue with someone else with some kind of basis of reality to win the argument.
Yeah,
essentially,
it's
out of bitterness that you will play a game so that you can argue with someone about whether that game is great or not, right?
Yeah, totally. That's all this is about.
Those other voices and like the kind of like non-fan versions of that will come up, I think, through time and give us more perspective on those games. But I do love getting that kind of like super fan view on these games and titles, right?
As they
come along.
So yeah, Kingdom Hearts 3 reviews hitting now. The wait is almost over for you. GameSpot 8.0, IGN 8.7, Game Informer 9.5, Polygon no score. And they didn't like it though. It's Allegra Frank. She's the one negative one in here. Not negative one. I don't mean like that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Kingdom Hearts isn't simple anymore. It isn't just joy and bright colors and Disney heroes. Instead, the conclusion of this story is tangled up in so many conflicting threads, each one a heavy burden on its hero, whose smile now feels unnerving. Kingdom Hearts 3 is an example of what can go wrong when a series that once stood in contrast to its peers as a lighthearted alternative loses its way. And then GamesRadar 4 out of 5. So they're out there. They're coming. They were super tight. I've seen the Reset Era thread about this, about review codes. Kind of funny. Didn't get one, which for me was mind-boggling because Tim... Exactly. Go to hell, Square. No. But like, Tim is so the Kingdom Hearts guy that I thought for sure it was a shoe-in, and then we didn't get one, and we hit him up, and they were like, we don't know. I was like, I know you do know.
They do know.
Just shoot straight with me. When are we going to get it? But we'll see. We're supposed to get him soon, and then Tim will have something to say on the Kind of Funny Games cast. Number 2. Fallout 76 isn't going free-to-play anytime soon, says Bethesda. Imran Khan over at Game Informer writes, over the past few days, a rumor on social media has been repeated across various message boards and subreddits about Fallout 76, Bethesda's embattled open-world survival game, being pulled from store shelves. The rumor suggests Bethesda is planning to relaunch the game as free-to-play, eschewing the $60 price tag it launched with in November. Bethesda has offered a brief but direct tweet to counter the rumors. They are responding to someone who just goes, "There is no truth to this rumor." Thanks, Bethesda. While this confirms the rumor is false, it's not surprising it was able to take hold. The public perception of Fallout 76 is one of an ailing game that Bethesda is looking to either rehabilitate or wash its hands of and move on. Given the need to manage the Fallout brand, however, the publisher likely wants to keep the game going with improvements for a while longer before they consider anything as drastic as changing the payment model. It's got to happen, right?
You know, I always feel like any game that struggles is always going to be faced with that conundrum.
Yeah.
So I do think they can hold out if they need to, but I think the game would be more interesting maybe that way. But I'm not entirely sold on that universe. I mean, that's the problem, I think, to some degree. I feel like it needs a reinvention a bit across the board. I watched many hours, and I listened to Reiner kind of like... He was screaming in his office and then be like...
That game broke that man.
Yeah, it did. It really did.
So yeah. Depressing as he's trying to review it. And I meanwhile, I was just playing and I was like, I'm having fun, but I see you're in a living nightmare of PC glitches and horribleness.
So he was all over the map. And it's funny too, because even like when you asked him, he'd be like, why do you... And he's like, I like the game still. I'm like, but you... All you said were things that annoyed you.
Yeah.
And he was like... Because there are endless things that are annoying.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he likes being in that universe, and I think there is something to be said for that. But I don't think they quite hit the note that Fallout fans wanted, right?
Sure.
And so if they went free to play right now, they'd be kind of, I think, throwing in the towel a little bit on this game, just of like, this is what it is. Where
yeah.
I think if it's the Bethesda I've talked to, it sounds like they want to like... They love the idea of having an open world Fallout. They need to just like reinvest and figure out a ways to like start to tailor the game more to what I think people are looking for from it.
Yeah.
So going free to play is going to make it where they're going to ask people to kind of give them money for something that's not entirely loved at this moment, right? To put it any other way. So I think they need to find a new way to kind of like introduce the game and get it.
I feel like they've got to have... A big, hey, here's the giant update that's changing everything you know
exactly.
about Fallout 76, and give that to the players that are already there, see if that sticks, and then after that, you could open up the discussion of free-to-play.
Yes, exactly.
Because right now, why would, hey, it's free-to-play. All right, well, nobody likes it. Like, it's a game that's just been trounced everywhere, and like, you know, I did enjoy my time with it when we were playing at launch, and then it was as totally expected. I put, I don't even know, 12 hours in, and then something else came out that was a better game, and that took it off. And so then now it's just been better game after better game after better game. And I see it on my PlayStation 4 cross media bar. But when I'm like, I'm gonna click, oh right, there's new Assassin's Creed Odyssey DLC, go over there and play that, right? Oh, I never finished Walking Dead episode 3, go play that. There's so many things competing for my time that
exactly
a wishy-washy Fallout 76, I'm like, well, I enjoyed wandering, but I'm not in a hurry to get back to it.
Yeah, and I think they can find something. I mean, it's a great world. I think that there's something there. It's just wasn't there at the start. And there's been plenty of games that have, you know, missed out of the gates and found their way.
Especially as games of service, right?
Yep. Yeah. So it's possible. I mean, I do think it's going to need like something big. I think you're right. I think it's going to need something that really brings people back to rethink it, because it is not only, you know, I don't think the game is as bad as like the internet puts it to be.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
but once you have that perception,
the well's poisoned.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta lose that, and that's gonna take some doing.
When all it was people showing their glitches, it doesn't matter that those glitches don't happen all the time or even that often. I think they're kind of often, but you know, all that often, that's still what people see. They see, you know, Reiner running into a room and the enemy not turning, and him shooting it and the enemy not reacting. And they're like, that's what Fallout 76 is.
Yeah,
they have
exactly.
a perception problem.
Yeah.
Fix.
And so that's going to be free to play is not fixing that.
No, exactly. There you go. It's free. Like, it's still crap. Number three, final story on the Roper Report. I screwed this up, actually. So I was good for a while about this. Turn the page. So I'm going to finish this story. We're going to talk about it, right? And then I'm going to give you a really bad transition, and I need you to read everything that's bold and underlined, all right? That's not
it.
Right now.
All right. I got it.
Number
I'm
three.
In.
PUBG Lite Beta starts. This is from Shabana Arif over at IGN. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is getting a free-to-play Lite version for low-spec machines. PUBG announced that its Lite version is for players who were previously unable to access the game due to the specification requirements. The open beta began today, and the devs are promising exclusive content and quality of life features for PUBG Lite. Unlike the standard version of the game, PUBG Lite will be free to play for its lifetime. The PUBG Lite beta currently only features the original map and ground, and players will be able to participate in solo, duo, squads, and in third person perspective. Additional game modes and maps will be coming to the beta going forward, so hopefully PUBG Lite players will eventually be able to try out the latest map, the snowy Vikendi 6x6 map. Did PUBG get its hooks into Game Informer folks? Were you guys all about it at any point?
Yeah, I mean, we had fans. I don't know. You know, it's funny. I call them, it's probably a bad term, but lifestyle games, like PUBG and Fortnite are
the ones that demand your attention.
Yeah. They literally, it's like the thing you play, right?
Dota.
Dota. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They're integrated into your life. You're not playing a lot of different games. Sure. You do take a break from time to time, but they generally eat up a lot of your time. So as editors and journalists, it's hard. Right. To do that. So everyone played a lot of PUBG, enjoyed PUBG. We have fans that still, Dan still plays from time to time. It's just once you kind of get it, understand it, that's kind of a compartmentalized thing of being someone covering games. You're like, I got it. I'm understood.
I got to move on. I got to get to the next thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that's the thing. But, PUBG changed a lot of things. Right. You know what I mean? I think that it's amazing how that battle royale mode is just it almost seems like it doesn't seem as new as it is.
Yeah, right? it feels like it's been here forever now.
It does, right? And so that says something when it all of a sudden feels so comfortable in the game space and it's kind of a staple of first person shooters at this point.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be really interesting to see. So I think these changes are good. I think it's a change they're making because they know that they're not alone anymore.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They definitely
have to
figure out ways to expand the market, get more people playing.
And I mean, that's the craziest thing. You know what I mean? And I don't know if you have, you've been at this a little bit longer than me, just a little bit. But the way when PUBG was cooking and coasting and we were like, it's setting a new Steam concurrent every week. This is insane. And then Fortnite, who was dead on arrival, right?
Yeah.
Bad out of the gate launch. Then where they are now, a little bit more than a year later. Now it's just been such a crazy story, and it does all compute to a feeling like Battle Royale's been here forever, when in reality PUBG was just a second ago the hottest thing in the world.
And it's crazy, and I think that it's gonna be interesting for them. I think they have some challenges of how they're gonna move forward of reaching more people and moving their technology forward, because that is the one thing I would diss PUBG for, is that the game is a little ugly. It could look way better. But I love the stuff they're doing in esports. I think they've done a lot of really cool UI and performance things. There's a lot of gameplay stuff there that I think they're hitting spot on and doing really well with. It's just gonna be interesting because Fortnite's gonna spend $1 billion to compete with them in that same space. And I think they can coexist. I mean, there definitely is a different feel to Fortnite with its kind of
vibe. And this is especially for somebody who is at this point a complete outsider to PUBG. When PUBG got to consoles, me and Kevin played a lot, and Kev played even way more than me, and I dabbled here once or twice in PC Let's Plays, but understood it was reading about it. Fortnite, I play a lot of Fortnite. I'm in and out of Fortnite where I'll go through cold patches but then come back and be all over it. I feel like PUBG hasn't gone up a level. You know what I mean? The competition arrived and they haven't risen to the challenge yet. Yeah, they have a new map, sure. There's bug fixes here and there, but like you're saying, it still is ugly. It still feels janky. It still looks... And this is, again, somebody who's not playing actively.
Yeah.
But from what I see of it and from how I hear... When I rarely hear people talk about it, I read a lot of news about PUBG. I don't talk to a lot of people who are like, oh, I'm still playing PUBG nonstop. When they finally accept that challenge, I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, I look back at... I think there was a time when... Maybe back when you were at IGN, it was wait, League of Legends is the most popular game. There wasn't in the mainstream, there wasn't talk about League, but it had its fan base and it was people were playing the hell out of that game because it was a lifestyle. That's all they were doing and living in their own communities. Right. And so I think PUBG has a pretty strong community in that regard, but I mean, Call of Duty's not going to just let them have that.
Yeah.
Right. And Call of Duty.
And that was the thing, Blackout, right? People love Blackout.
Yeah. So it's a challenge for them. Right. And you can, just as quickly as you can rise, you can fall in the games industry. If you don't give gamers, I mean, we're a demanding bunch.
Are right? we? Yeah. Oh, no, really? I don't know. Like, yeah, please. What are you talking about?
They can turn on you pretty quickly, I think.
Sure.
So I think it's important that they're always trying to move forward. So this is a good move. I mean, it's not an exciting move.
Yeah. But it's again, though, building, getting people in the door, right? And that's what they got to do.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see how it plays out, Andy. But we won't have results on that for so long. If I wanted something more immediate, like say, what came to the mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today. It is a Thursday, so get ready for a whole bunch of Switch stuff. I'll do all the non-Switch stuff first. Battlefleet Gothic Armada 2 comes to PC. Little Imps, a dungeon builder, comes to PC. Life is Strange 2, Episode 2, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. I have played it. I will talk about it on the Kind of Funny Games cast this afternoon. It's good, though. Thumbs up. Jack Quest, The Tale of the Sword, comes in Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Windows PC. That should have gone down there, so I'm going to skip it for 1 second. Dead in Vinland will be coming to the Nintendo Switch in Q2 2019. However, the DLC, The Battle of the Hodennings, is released for PC today. Now we get into the Switch stuff with some Wii U crap at the end. Pikuniku comes to Switch. Hashtag kill all zombies, one word, comes to Switch. I'm going to stop saying Switch now. ACA Neo Geo Ninja Masters. Achung Cthulhu Tales. Yeah, yeah. As Divine Hearts 2. Bad Dream Coma. Cinderella, an interactive fairy tale, is out, and there's a demo for it.
Everyone was dying for that.
And that's the one they were waiting for.
They were waiting for it.
Color Zen Kids. Cursed Castilia. Doodle God Evolution. Dragon's Lair Trilogy. Fishing Universe Simulator. Get Amped Mobile. Le Grand Legacy. Tale of the Fate Bounds. Mugsters gets a demo. My Exotic Farm 2018. My Memory of Us, a game Gary and I got codes for, and I don't think either of us played yet. Pixel Colors. Timberman Versus. Utopia 9, A Volatile Vacation. Venture Towns. And then here we go. Azure Snake is on Wii U. Azure Snake is on Nintendo 3DS. Dragon's Wrath is on Nintendo 3DS. Phasmophobia. Hall of Specters 3D is on the Nintendo 3DS. Oh, I hear some stuff I added in the wrong place. Retona launches on Steam today. And then Isle of Madness expansion is available for the Elder Scrolls Legends. Oof, man. Nintendo, just putting them all out. Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Put them out in the shop.
And putting on the Wii U, and aren't they closing the Wii U shop?
I think this is last week for the Wii U shop. So get it while it's hot, Azure Snake. You got some points hanging out. Might as well. New dates for you. Dead in Vinland will be coming to the Nintendo Switch in 2019. That's not making sense. Evoland, the action-adventure from Shiro Games, and its acclaimed follow-up, Evoland 2, will arrive on the Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, as a Legendary Edition bundle this February. Glass Masquerade comes to PlayStation 4 February 5th/6th for North America and Europe, respectively, and then February 8th for Nintendo Switch and Xbox One. There's a Storm Divers playtest this weekend if you want to hit up the Housemarque website. Melbit's World comes to PlayStation 4 on February 5th, and then Generation Zero will arrive March 26th on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Deals of the day for you. Kevin at GameSpot reminds you, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate's first DLC character, Piranha Plant, is coming very soon. The new fighter is slated to arrive this February, and unlike Persona 5's Joker, it won't be included as part of the game's Fighter's Pass. However, early adopters will be able to receive the character for free of charge, but your time is running out. To receive the Piranha Plant for free, you need to register your copy of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate on My Nintendo by January 31st. This was done automatically if you purchased the game digitally through the Nintendo Switch eShop. But if you picked up a physical copy, you need to register it by pressing the plus button while highlighting the game's icon on the Switch menu, then selecting My Nintendo Rewards option. So good looking out, everybody, on that for your Piranha Plant. And then Axiom Verge is going to be free on the Epic Game Store from February 7th through the 21st.
Amazing game.
Oh, yeah, totally. We loved it here. Yeah. I'm so glad that Tom found so much success with it and continues to find success with it.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you're only playing games on the Epic Game Store, there you go. It's finally there for you. It's time for Reader Mail, Andy, but first I'm going to tell you about our two sponsors. Number one is Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, and options and cryptocurrencies, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. This is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. It's simple and intuitive, a clear design with data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Kevin Coelho from kindoffunny.com uses Robinhood. He loves it because the app is clean and because there are no commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission. Be like Kevin! Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build a portfolio. Sign up at games.robinhood.com. That's games.robinhood.com. Up next is Third Love. Let's talk about bras. Using millions of real women's measurements, Third Love designs its bras with breast size and shape in mind for an impeccable fit and incredible feel. Third Love is an industry leader with 70 sizes, including its signature half cup sizes. Skip the trip. Find your fit in 60 seconds with Third Love's online fit finder. Order and try on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. But don't take my word for it. Take my wife's. She ordered from Third Love, and the size wasn't quite right. Of course, returning the bra was free, and a fit stylist helped Jen find an even better bra as a replacement. Does Jen like her new bra? You betcha. She told me, quote, "It doesn't feel cheap like most bras. It's mostly meant to be worn strapless, but it still came with two sets of straps." Two sets of straps, people! Be like Jen. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/games now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's Third Love, spelled out, .com/games for 15% off today. Andy, I want to start with people who listen to this show love the industry, and they love the inside baseballness of it.
Yes.
When we talk
okay,
about
gotcha.
What's happening on our side of the screen. So I'm going to double back to Blackjack's question. Hey, Greg and Andy, I have a question for Andy about his role as EIC of Game Informer. Does he ever miss playing games himself / writing features about them? Game Informer's February cover feature is Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, and the game looks really cool. But I'm guessing Andy didn't get much of a chance to play because he was probably too busy running the editorial. Is it hard for him to stay passionate about his work in video games when he doesn't get a chance to play / cover them personally? Keep up the great work.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. First of all, it's tough. I think, you know, a long time ago, we slowly, as we got bigger, it was like someone has to do these other jobs, mm-hmm. and you kind of take them on because they need to get done. And then as you get bigger, you start to go, oh, well, I'm going to do this. And like, I used to be like, I'm going to do this review. And then there would be a fire that like, yep. I need to take care of. And then all of a sudden I'd be like throwing reviews at people last second and be like, I can't do that. And, it was not good for everyone. And like, you know, and for me and for Game Informer, we really like, I want people to be able to be professional game reviewers. Do you know what I mean? I know this goes way back. Like, I want people to be able to enjoy life and do it and be a real job, right? Like, that was important to me. And so like, we try to keep like quality of life up for everyone that works there. We don't want anybody, you know, absolutely destroying themselves. So people work really hard because they love games, right? And they play a lot of games. And so I still love games. I still play games. But yes, I do miss that. And I miss going on, like, you know, there was a time when I went to every cover trip and saw every game and like got all the inside scoop on every game. And it was a lot of fun. And it's really fun. Like I said earlier, like it's fun to watch. A lot of times too, when we would do like a world first look at a game or one of the first kind of in-depth looks at it, it was, you really kind of got such a raw view of the game because it wasn't like, they hadn't practiced it 50,000 times, right?
Sure.
Like their spiels weren't down.
Yeah,
like you could get like a pretty raw talk about it. And I find those fascinating. And so I really do miss those. I mean, that's definitely one of those things. I do talk to them early on. I set everything up. Like I talk and deal with all the games all the way up to the point where it's like, all right, now come out to the developer and have fun. And I'm like, let me hand that off, right? And so that's the kind of unfortunate part of that.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy, like, I love making things, right? I think that's really fun.
Yeah.
And I enjoy getting the magazine every month and kind of looking at it and going like, oh, wow, we pulled that off. Like, one of the things that's scary to me about game development is like, how do you work 3 years on one game?
Dude.
Like, I don't know. You know, maybe someday, but like, it's like, I don't know how I could do that, right?
Yeah.
I like monthly, weekly, daily. I like the kind of fast pace of that. So I do miss some of the writing stuff, though, to be fair, I hired people smarter than me. That's always the secret.
Good job. That's how you do it. Yeah.
Which is hire people that are better writers than I was. I've never thought myself a great writer. I write the letter from the editor every month and like try to, you know, give some perspective from my point of view. But like, I think the people that are doing the work at Game Informer are better than me. Right. And I'm just there to help them be good. And I think that's a kind of fun thing to do.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy it. So, but yes, I miss it, but I still love games. I mean, I play way too many games. Like I play too many games too long. I do love Destiny and things like that.
Yeah,
that are like I play it every night for 8 hours. Right. So I still put in a lot of game time hours, but, it's tough to kind of not report some things. And I also too, like, sometimes if I get a story, I will feed it to our team because I want them to do that, to have that opportunity, right? Because it's like, I could, you know, step in and write a story every once in a while, but I like facilitating and getting a chance to make these people, or my team, like, this sounds horrible. Like,
these
like,
people.
like, no, the team, I'm always like, I want to make the team better, right? You know what I mean? That's important to me. That's success for me. So I'm always trying to help them be better at what they do.
Yeah.
So like, you know, Dan is a huge Dark Souls guy. He got to go to Japan for the second time to go to From Software to get this story. He's got a great account of everything that he played and how the game kind of rolls out in that issue. And he was the guy to do it. You know,
yeah, exactly. You want your best person on it. Or yeah, the one who fits the job the most. Yeah.
I mean, would I have liked to have gone to Tokyo and gone to From? Yes, yes, yes.
Of course.
You know, play the game some more. Yes, yes, yes. But that's just kind of the way the ball bounces, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I think in this thing, you deal with that being the victim of your own successes, right? And that's what we were talking about earlier,
yeah.
Right? Of like, this has been a crazy spring so far of preview events. We just talked about Anthem, you know, and we were talking, Fran's going to talk about Far Cry today. There's a bunch I don't know that I haven't announced, so I won't even say them, but there's so many different events that are going on. And the fact that I have to sit there and go, no,
yeah.
Sorry, no. I'd love to come do that.
Yeah.
No, I can't fly across the country to do that. And even like we couldn't even send Andy to go play Anthem yesterday because we needed him on shows here. And it's that weird thing of, I still have that mindset of, if I'm reviewing a game or I get a game for review or whatever and I see the embargo, I'm like, I want to hit that embargo. And it's just also, but it's that thing of like, but that's not what Kind of Funny is. You know,
yeah.
Kind of Funny isn't. We talk about the game on the Gamescast and our audience knows that and they wait for the Gamescast. So I can put out a Gamescast special about something, but does it really benefit making more work and then taking it out of the way it usually works for the team? And is a tweet enough? And it's weird to wrestle with the way everything evolves and changes, especially in our own careers.
Well, and the other thing too is that like, you know, I think I look at game reviews sometimes as like, for a lot of people, I feel like it's kind of self-affirmation or like a like reinforcement of their own ideas, which I know sounds kind of weird, but it's like rushing to get reviews is what kind of what we do. It's kind of the industry, but
yeah.
Like, I don't know that it changes the fact or the success of a review. We can do a review like right at the moment the embargo breaks and we can do it later. And I think people are looking for that perspective kind of one way or the other,
yeah.
Right? You know,
yeah.
So it's like, if you're still kind of investigating that game or even finished a game, it's funny. So many people will like read our reviews and comment on our reviews after they've finished it. You didn't really need a review at that point. You know, you already know what you think about it. And I think that's just part of the discussion that gamers like to have about games. And so like, I think you're right. I think you don't have to be there at the embargo.
It still feels so weird.
It does feel weird.
It's everything I was brought up and like trained to do that. Like, yeah, the Resident Evil embargo lifts and I was like, oh, that was today. And I'm just like, well, here are my thoughts. And I haven't even finished my second run. So like, but everybody wants that opinion still because they want to know if it lines up with their things because they look to me for a certain thing and they want to know how I feel about certain things.
But I don't know if it was a tweet you did or I was watching one of the shows earlier in the week was like, you know, you put it in simple terms like, hey, I'd never played it. I didn't like the tank controls, which you and me, brother.
So many people wanted to blow that tweet out. Oh, everything had tank controls back then. I'm like, I know, motherfucker, but it didn't work for that game. That game didn't feel right with it.
I did not like the tank controls back then. So, I mean, like, I think you distilled it very quickly into like something that didn't need a giant review.
Well, you know, we don't plan this show. I just give you papers and
I know show. Exactly.
We have the next two questions, one are about reviews and one is about Resident Evil. So we're right on time.
Wow. It's almost like we're professionals.
Almost. Amon wrote in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and had this question. Hello, KFGD crew. Within a month, two of IGN reviews have been in hot water. Ace Combat 7's director expressed his disappointment when the reviewer didn't play the game on expert control, while the reviewer for Resident Evil 2 missed the second half of the game, prompting the review to be edited. I understand that IGN is a huge organization with many people working on many different things that need to be released as soon as possible. But after these incidents, including last year's Dead Cell controversy, should IGN or any publication take more time and then have their review looked at by fellow colleagues to avoid mistakes? Sure, the review will be released a bit late, but isn't that worthwhile in doing so? Keeping the review and the company integrity intact while avoiding future damaging controversy. Thanks for reading and have a great day, everyone. Of course, I don't think IGN has been damaged.
Exactly.
We're going to get into this, obviously, but ahead of time, I feel like Amon's a bit more loaded in his wording than I would be in everything that's happened recently.
Yes.
Dead Cells, a completely different story where I was furious as an IGN alum, as somebody who still thinks of himself as an IGN family member, right? That somebody would violate the trust and sanctity of what that editorial is, right? That pool. In terms of, I hadn't heard about the Ace Combat 7 thing, but yeah, the RE2 thing where second run got missed and wasn't understood correctly.
Yeah.
reviewing games is so hard.
Yes.
And I, growing up being such a Game Informer fan and EGM, when I'd go see the review crew and it was multiple people talking about a game, I always thought that was so cool. But it's so hard to imagine that games industry. You know what I mean? Of like how few games came out and that everybody could play the same thing and finish it and have ideas on it. Whereas now it is, Tim's playing Kingdom Hearts and I'm playing this, but I'm trying to get that and I want to do that. And this, I mean, even like Tim has done all of the Resident Evil stuff, but I've only done one and a half of it and blah, 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 trying to balance all that out.
I mean, the list you read earlier for games that come out today was like spring.
Right. Back in the day, that was what it all was, right? And so trying to balance how you review games comes down, I think, to such a big part of what do you want to be as well. Kind of funny, like I said, right? We get to be just ourselves and talk about what we play and what our passions are and where we're at in a game. And I, as you all know, and maybe hated some of you, last fall was dominated by me giving you Assassin's Creed Odyssey updates every week. Yeah. Where I was with Cassandra Story. And it was great, and that was a cool narrative, but that doesn't work for a site like IGN, who does need to do it.
Yeah.
And so I feel for the Resident Evil 2 review, for Damon in particular, because obviously I've known Damon for years. I love Damon. Damon's like family to me. Damon gave me my start in podcasting. I have been there where I've put up a review. And back in the day, it was just a comment on the review of like, no, you said this isn't there, but it is there. And I'm like, is it? And you find this weird and through hook or crook or whatever it was that I had a preview build or whatever. I just didn't see it. To the Resident Evil thing, I finished my first playthrough is Leon, started the Claire thing, was like, man, this is harder. It's moving way quicker. But I'm also, I'm confused by it. And so I texted Britt from What's Good, who's like the Resident Evil fan.
I never noticed.
Yeah. And like, she gave me back paragraphs and paragraphs of descriptions of why this is different and what it is. And I was like, thank you. I totally understand if I was reviewing that and I'm on a deadline and I finish it and I jump into it and I'm like, wait, what? And then I jump into the other one. I'm like, what is the real thing and how to figure all that out? And does this really affect my opinion? Because it is similar, right? And we'll get to a question about that, about Resident Evil. Maybe. We're running short on time. But in terms of like, why are you holding the standard? Reviewing's so tough. And it's moving so fast. And there are so many different things. For the Ace Combat 7 thing, which I hadn't heard about, you know, disappointment that the reviewer didn't play an expert control, that I can't fault them for. Because when I played games, I played on, when I'm reviewing games, I would always be like, I want to play it on what most people are going to do, which is just baseline. What's the baseline experience?
Yeah.
And so for a game like this of like, and I haven't played Ace Combat 7. Kevin, did you ever turn it on? I know you took it home.
No, I didn't.
It's been busy.
Yeah.
It's been busy.
Very busy.
Like I wouldn't expect to, and this is not knowing anything about the game, I wouldn't expect to go through every control scheme and figure that out. So I understand that, you know, Amon, I understand that the director would be upset about that, but I do think that he has to understand a lot of people are never going to touch that. You have to get in a very specific way about that. Yeah. And so even then to get to your question, Amon, of like, does IGN need to look at how they review things? Yes, no. I mean, there's no way I have no earthly idea how an editor, if we were doing written reviews here, how you could catch the plagiarism of Dead Cells. Unless you read everything. And it was from video reviews.
Yeah.
How would you know that that's the same? Because again, I don't even work at IGN anymore. I don't have time to watch all the kind of funny shows, let alone read every IGN review and then read and listen to everything else. Like, that's impossible. So that is a violation of trust on a different level that I think changes the game. And in terms of the Resident Evil 2 thing, that's an innocent mistake. That's a human being a human reviewing a game trying to do it. You know what I mean? Like, I think they did exactly what they needed to do, which was react quickly and be open and honest about it.
Yeah, I think that's all you can do. I mean, I think mistakes are going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. The one is totally a trust break. I mean, the one is like, you thought this was someone who was genuine and going to do their job, and then they just didn't do it, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, like, that's not, I don't think IGN's at fault there, and they handled that pretty well, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
I mean,
like, as soon as there was trouble, you know what I mean? Like, shout out to Dan Stapleton and that editorial team. Is like, when they do hear about this thing, they do get on it.
They took care of it. So, I think anything, it's easy to miss. You got to remember, games are so complicated these days and continue to get more complicated, and some games are simple, right? But I mean, some games are like ridiculous, or even like the day you put out your review, they put out a patch that changes.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally one of the things that you were like, I hate the fact that this is this, you know, NPC does this. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's different.
At Embargo, I put up my Rise of the Tomb Raider. Is that the latest one? Shadow of the Tomb Raider tweet, where I was like, dude, the facial animation sucked, this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. And then I looked at the sheet and I was like, oh, there's going to be a day one patch. I'm like, fucking delete the tweet, respond to it like, hey, I fucked up. Sorry, this is all getting patched. I didn't know.
Yeah, and so it's difficult. And that's the other thing, too. We spend a fair amount of time like sitting like, hey, we don't understand this. Can you clarify on it? And sometimes it's hard to get even the teams that are working on supporting the game because to answer all those questions, because it gets into a lot of minutiae that not everyone's like kind of prepared for. So, yeah. And it happens.
Yeah. So I think there's a million different pieces to this puzzle. And
yeah.
I don't think that either of these, Ace Combat or Resident Evil 2 or, you know, Dead Cells to that thing, is like, oh my God, damn the man. This is horrible. What are you doing? Like,
how many reviews has IGN done?
Yeah.
I mean, like, what percentage of their total is this?
And
I mean,
they can't catch a break right now. Yeah. These little mistakes that wouldn't be a big deal other times, they would just be a fascinating story, yeah, are here fucking shit up. Let's go to EJ, who wrote in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. He's a bronze member, at least, and says, full disclosure, I'm a Resident Evil fanboy. I've enjoyed about 65% of Resident Evil 6. You can edit where you see fit. I didn't edit that much. I've been noticing something about the Resident Evil 2 reviewers. Many reviewers are saying, I wish Capcom did more. Now, I haven't played the full game, but fucking look at it. To keep this short, they rearranged the entire game and even added the A and B scenarios, something I thought they'd never do. Yes, you revisit the same areas, but that's what the game always was. And it's Resident Evil at its finest. Resident Evil 6 didn't visit the same locations, and we see how people responded to that. Remember, people said it was too long. Remasters like Crash, Spyro, and Shadow of the Colossus did a one-to-one remaster, and I didn't hear any of the reviews saying, I wish they did more. What more did they want Capcom to do? I just find that to be an odd negative on a game that is a 100% remake/remaster. I hear you, EJ, and here's my counterpoint to that. I think this speaks to how good Resident Evil is, too, and how much we wanted to put more time into it. Again, as yeah. I've said, I got turned off early to Resident Evil 2. So in my head, when Claire and Leon got separated, I played Leon, didn't like it, stop. Resident Evil 2 now I have. But I always assumed that Claire's story was her running around Raccoon City and then occasionally crossing back over with her. So that's mine from the old days, stepping into the new game, playing it for the first blush. When I finished Leon's story and I started Claire's, that's why I texted Brittany. I was like, did I do something wrong or is this how it works? Not because, oh man, what a bunch of bullshit, but because I assumed, as good as that game is and as good as that game plays and as good as that game looks, that I was going to get in a modern game, you'd feel there'd be a second campaign that was drastically different,
yeah,
in terms of like, no, you're doing all this different stuff. And I've talked to Tim about it too. He's like, you get new characters, you get new cutscenes, you get different stuff. You just need to play through the PlayStation. I'm like, totally going to, but it was a damper on my excitement of like, can't wait to see what's happening with her. I'm like, wait, why is she? And I was like, yeah, to Britt, I was like, so what's the continuity? Like, how do people argue that this is real? Because if this, and she's like, it's just have fun at the game. I'm like, great, gotcha. It's like such a callback to the old era,
yes,
right, of what games were, that to have it in this beautiful, amazing, modern game, I think it was just a weird shift, right, where people had a jerk reaction of like, oh, wait, that's not what I was expecting. I wanted to be more like that. And when you compare it to something like Shadow Crash or Spyro, those games move on, right? And don't have you in the same way doubling back and doing the same story different. That's all.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting. I feel like this is something that games as an entertainment medium, as we've grown, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like really changed that, like, we're not used to having these kind of Criterion editions,
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
thing,
yeah,
where people are going back and re-envisioning, or like, you know, director's cut kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that a game tried to do a big change like this, but keep to the roots, right? So you're going to always, I think, disappoint some who want it to be the true experience from the original, or, you know, that even I think there, I heard people that were like, oh, Spyro's totally beautiful this time, but like, I liked the kind of camp, you know, like,
yeah, yeah,
they're always going to have
no one's ever happy.
No one's ever happy, yeah.
So we're picky bunch, as you say.
So it's, I think it's interesting. I think it's fun. I think that opens the door too. So like, you know, you could go and revisit Resident Evil 2 remake and do it again and do it a different way and,
yeah,
and try some different things,
sure,
you know, so I think that's interesting to watch a game have that kind of reaction, and people are loving like what they did. I don't think it's getting I don't know what the Metacritic is.
Oh,
but
it's,
I'm sure
it's super hot. Yeah, it's, yeah, it's like that thing where it's like the one, you know, you're doing a review, you're super positive, but it's not a 10. So
here's
one, why.
It's your one critique.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can look past it pretty easily. The game's amazing. I can't wait to play more of it. Andy, it's time to squat up. This is where one of the best friends writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, giving me their name, username, platform of choice, and why they need help in a video game. I read it here. The best friends come and find them, and everybody plays together. Today, Brian needs help on Xbox One. His Xbox live name is Ever Aider. Maybe Eve Raider. You can never be sure. You know what I mean? E-V-E-R-A-T-E-R. As Anthem and Division 2 are coming out, I like to squad up with some best friends. I recently had a tummy tuck, and I'm stuck at home for the next 2 months off of work and could use some online friends. I usually play all of my games single player, but I'm trying to reach outside my comfort zone, and I know how great the best friends are. Thank you for all you do, Brian. Everybody hit up Brian on Xbox if you want to play those. Remember, his name is in the YouTube version of this. Andy, people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames can go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up. We did pretty well today. The big one I've seen here is, the, and I'll go to, yeah, Nintendo. It's just the original Wii shop closing, not the Wii U shop.
That's what we screwed up.
The Wii
shop
channel is closing down on the Wii. Wii U still running. Don't worry about it.
What's next?
It's still coming eventually. Be careful. Zaire says out today. Command & Conquer. There's a whole bunch of Command & Conquer games out, and they're all backwards compatible with Xbox One. That's not a you're wrong. It's a PSA, and I don't know about it. And Nanobiologist says the Metacritic right now for RE2 Remake is 91 on PS4 and 93 on Xbox
One. Wow.
So they're doing pretty fine.
Yeah.
Even if people are like, I wish I could do more in the second story. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can watch live. Twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Watch later on YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames and listen on podcast services around the globe. Andy, you're amazing.
Thank you so much for having me.
You need to come back more, all right? I'm gonna abuse you anytime you're in SF now. Not like that. You know what I mean? Where can people keep up with you?
GameInformer.com, GIAndyMac, my Twitter. I try to get out there and say dumb things all the time.
Oh, good. That's great. You'll fit right in around here. Great. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
Thank you.
Thank you.